Welcome to episode 5 of the Marion Vermeersen podcast. My goal for this podcast is to have interesting conversations with interesting people and to have fun doing it. So today I'm interviewing Ronnie Bennett, the author of one of my favorite blogs, Time Goes By. During her professional career, Ronnie was a radio show producer, a production assistant on The Dick Cavett Show, TV producer of the Barbara Walters specials in 2020, editorial director of The Whoopi Goldberg Show, and in January 1996, she became the managing editor for CBS TV's first website. She and her team learned by doing and created the CBS TV 1996 election website. It was an election website that to this day holds up as one of the best ever. She researched aging for several years before she began the Time Goes By blog in March of 2004, and has been writing on aspects of what it's really like to get older for more than 5 years now. Ronnie, thank you so much for agreeing to be on this show. Time Goes By is one of my favorite websites, or one of my favorite blogs. I know you've been doing it for almost 5 years now. How has it evolved?
Well, in the beginning, it was a place of all the research I'd been doing for years on aging. What I didn't count on was the community that's grown around it, which is really satisfying. It's become a bit of a hub for elder bloggers. When I started it, as I said, it's just a place to put stuff, but now I feel a real responsibility to keeping it up.
It must be an enormous amount of work, though. How many comments and blog-related emails do you think you get in a day?
Oh, well, comments... I don't participate in the conversation and comments, or I wouldn't get anything else done. The only time I jump in is if there's some misinformation, or if the conversation is veering in, you know, if there's some troll around doing something not nice. But email, I answer, and anywhere from 30 to 50 emails a day from readers.
Wow. Do you have any tips for keeping the work from overwhelming you?
No, I just let it overwhelm me.
Well, one of the amazing things to me about Time Goes By is what is how large and supportive the community is. What do you think the keys are? Why do you think you built such a community of readers and bloggers?
Well, I'd like to think that it's because I'm so wonderful. I think community is built, the members of the community create the community is what I'm trying to say. That if you give them space to just be, don't put that too many rules out there. For instance, on my blog, you do not have to register to be able to leave comments. And you also, people will read blogs more when you put some of yourself and some of your personal stories into it. I try to do that as a jumping off place for larger points.
Right. I think actually that's one of the big keys is having a voice in there and being real. I think that's one of the things you do really well. I realized as I was preparing for this that you're really an expert on producing an interview show. What do you think are the keys to a good interview?
I think you have to do homework. You have to know what the point of your interview is. What are you going for? The homework is so that you know the person you're interviewing. Where do they come from? What are their past thoughts on whatever it is you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And know what you're going for with each question. You don't have to necessarily know the answer, but you... If you backgrounded yourself well enough in person, you know the direction you're going in.
That makes sense. You created on Time Goes By, you've got a personal timeline that you created and has pictures. And looking through that, I mean, I found it really, I don't think I'd looked through it before, and it was really interesting. I noticed pictures of you working with Barbara Walters, interviewing people all over the world. What things stand out as significant lessons learned from working with that show or working on that show?
I learned more about television production from Barbara Walters than any other television job I had ever. She takes a lot of knocks. People make fun of her, and her as she's gotten older, her little personal quirks seem to stand out more. But she is the smartest, hardest working host I have ever worked with. That I would do all the research for all of our interviews when I worked there. And what had happened is, I don't think you can teach this, quite by accident, Barbara's and my interest in people, what we're interested in about them, is very similar. And my goal always was to get all this research put together so that she wouldn't have any more questions. I would have answered every possible question she had for me. And sometimes I did it, but not very often. But she was also brilliant at this. Sometimes, particularly with politicians, you're stuck with somebody who really isn't very interesting. There is a past vice president I'm thinking of who will remain nameless. So boring, you wanted to cry. And on the Barbara Walters specials, we'd shoot 2 hours to get down and then edit down to 14 minutes. And even with that, this person couldn't be interesting. I mean, it was just put you straight to sleep interview. And we looked at it and we're both sitting there blank. What are we going to do? You can't put something like this on television. And she sat there for a few minutes and thought about it. And then she took the transcript of that cut and went through and rearranged it. And she said, let's put this back together and look at it. And you know, it was never going to be the most brilliant interview that anybody ever saw, but it finally moved, and it had some pacing to it, and you were ready to hear the next question and answer. Constantly I learned things like that.
You said that when you were doing the 1996 CBS News election website that really at that point no one knew yet how to best tell stories online, and you liked being part of inventing the future. So in looking back on that now 10 years ago, in your experiences of telling stories online, you've done a lot of it now. What do you think are the keys to telling a good story online?
One of the first things I figured out at CBSNews.com was I had a bunch of writers working for me, and I go through their stories, and we put them up online. And this is in the first 2 or 3 weeks. And they just pained me to read them online. They hurt so much. And there was nothing wrong with the stories. So I thought about it for a while, and what I figured out was it hurts. Compared to paper, it hurts to read online. And you cannot have long chunks of text, unbroken. So first I had to teach, you know how we learned at school that a paragraph is one large thought in each sentence, and it moves the thought up forward a little bit.
Right.
I had to learn to do was to take what was a full paragraph idea to me and break it down into 2 or 3 and sometimes even 4 standalone ideas so that they could be proper paragraphs. And once I taught myself to do that, then I sat with the writers and taught them how to do it. And to this day, I will not read large, heavy chunks of text. I just can't. It hurts.
So now, you've been retired how many years now? About
4 or 5.
Yeah. And I know you retired at least partly because of age discrimination. How do you keep from letting that make you bitter?
Well, it's not partly, it's entirely. I'm angry about that to this day. And in fact, I'm preparing a post tomorrow on age discrimination in the workplace. I had never, ever, ever thought about retirement.
Right.
And when there were the last layoff in 2004, I thought, okay, you know, so it's not any fun, but I'll go find another job. Done it before. But in that period of time, the years I'd been at that job, I got old. I looked old. And And it was, I don't want to go through the whole experience. It was awful, and I was getting deeper and deeper into debt. And so I was forced to sell my New York apartment and come live here in Maine, where it's cheaper. I'm not bitter about it, but I am really angry. And that ties into my blog in the way that, you know, when I started, it was just a place to put information about aging that I was interested in. What I didn't count on that happened during the first year of the blog was how fierce an advocate I've become for old people.
Right.
Part of that comes from my experience with not being able to find a job at age 64. I'm not bitter about it. I don't think that's quite the right word. I am angry. I am still better than I have ever been.
Right. I mean, it's so stupid. It's just plain stupid. Do you have any advice for people who are facing the same problem? I mean,
well, this post that I'm writing for tomorrow. No. And what I'm angry about, the issue I'm angry about this week is I ran across yet another, the 110 millionth story that supposedly gives advice and tips for older people looking for work. And it's the same old thing. Update your tech skills, get more stylish glasses, get a better haircut, make sure your clothing is up to date, be energetic, be positive. How do these people think we've been working all these years without knowing that stuff? And it just, I'm so tired of it, because in the same breath, in the same articles, you know, they just dismiss the idea that it's not incumbent on the applicant to live by the law. That's the employer's job.
Do you think you would have retired if it wasn't up to you?
Or if no.
It was up to you, I mean, no.
No. You know, I started doing websites in 1996. And it was fabulous. I could bring a lot of my past television and radio experience applied very well to the web. But we were still inventing it and learning how to do it. And the new technologies were coming onto the web and making things easier and better. And there was still so much to do. And I was having so much fun. Why would I stop?
Right, right. You know, I think that it made me, well, in some ways, realizing how much experience you had with the web, you know, compared to most people who are, most kids, anybody who's starting out, it made me realize one of the reasons Time Goes By is such a great website is because you have the experience. It's not something new to you, you know? So.
Well, a lot of radio and television is adaptable to the web, and I don't mean in video or audio. For instance, for many, many, many years, I wrote scripts for people like Barbara Walters and others for words for them to say on screen, speaking to the audience. That's a very different style of writing from writing for a page, for a book, a newspaper, a magazine. So I've kind of adapted that kind of writing to print writing, which makes it sound more conversational.
Right, right, right. So looking back, is there advice you'd give to kids just starting out right now when it comes to planning one's future?
You know, I've actually thought about that. Given the current economy, and I mean prior to the collapse of the housing market and the crash last year, that it's been... I'm no economist. It was obvious to me that housing prices couldn't keep going up, so I don't know what's the matter with the experts. I don't think that we're going to have a stable economy of the kind you and I remember for most of our adult lives. There have been recessions here and there, but they weren't very deep, and we all got through them, and you could keep saving and even taking a vacation or whatever. They were minor compared to what we are going through now. And I don't think we're going to come out of this for a long, long time. And when we do, I don't think the economy is ever going to achieve the stability it did in our mid-years.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice is, from the moment of your first paycheck, save.
Right.
That has to be your biggest goal as a young person starting out.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. It was. Do you have a philosophy of retirement now after going through all this? Do you have a way you look at retirement and make it the best it can be?
You know, I don't think in those big picture ways.
Right.
You know, I have a place to live that I like very much. I've got my cat. The blog keeps me busier than any job ever did. I've got lots of good books to read. I have friends. I'm learning new stuff all the time. What else is there?
Right. This is so true. I love being able to have the time to keep learning, and I think that's one of the best things about retirement, I tell you. So let's see, I guess it's almost been a week now since you did the Elders for Healthcare Reform Day, sponsored it on your blog, and you called all your readers to write about healthcare reform. Did it work out as you had hoped, and what were the results?
Well, we got a lot, somewhere between 40 and 50, and I was asking a lot of people. I wasn't asking, like, a quick little comment. I wanted people to pick a subtopic within healthcare reform and write in support of it and give reasons. And I was just amazed at the number of people that did it, and really good stuff. I spent a lot of that day, besides adding links to new ones as they came in all day to my post, contacting other media asking for it, and didn't get any responses. Yesterday, somebody mentioned it on Huffington Post, and so a whole lot of people are going back and reading that post yesterday and today. And also someone else submitted it to Dig, and so I'm getting a whole lot of people reading that post from that too. And so it's got a life beyond its one day on the blog. It's doing quite well.
How do you think the whole healthcare reform issue is going to turn out over the next 6 months or so?
I have no idea. I'm really frightened about it. Because it's become so negative over August, mm-hmm. and the birthers and the deathers and the thises and that's, you get a cute, you know, they're better at making up good, quick little phrases than the other side is.
Right.
I'm kind of astonished at how little people know, or at least the ones who are speaking up, that they don't go do their homework. Medicare will not be cut. But if we don't get health care reform now, Medicare runs out of money in 8 years, and then it will be cut.
Right.
And I don't get why people don't understand that.
Yeah. If
you're only as an old person thinking of yourself, that's enough reason to support health care reform.
Right, right. So in all the responses and the blogs that people wrote and everything, is there anything that you kind of stuck out as really pleasing you besides the amount of response and everything, or that really surprised you in the responses?
No, I think it didn't surprise me. I have really smart readers, and they did a really good job, thoughtful job, put a lot of work into those posts. So I wasn't surprised because they're smart. But I was, I think, surprised at the number who made the effort, because it wasn't just, as I said, knocking off a comment or a quick little post about what you saw on television last night.
Well, you know, I think the number of international people who responded was something, and what they said was something new to me. How many international, do you have a sense of your readers, what percentage are international outside the U.S.?
Oh, you know, it can only be a guess because I don't read the statistics that closely. But I'm guessing somewhere between 10 and 15%.
Okay.
Mostly Western European and Australia, but also places like Singapore, Turkey, a couple of other Southeast Asia countries, a lot of Canadians. That may even push the percentage up because there are a lot of Canadians.
Very well. Those posts were really interesting to me. The ones, especially those. So anyway, both you and I have careers that have spanned enormous changes in the computer industry. How did you originally get involved with computers?
Back in the mid-80s, I was at a friend's house. I think I was between jobs. and he had a kind of, it wasn't quite a computer yet, but it was like an electric typewriter that was connected to something that would save it. And you had to operate that a little differently from a typewriter. So I was planning on that, and I thought, this is really cool.
Right.
You couldn't really move sentences and paragraphs around like we can now, but it did a lot that a typewriter didn't. And that got me interested. You know, I had friends who worked in the computer industry, but I hadn't a clue what they did. And that got me interested. So I suppose by 80, as soon as the first home PCs, it was pre-Windows, so whenever that was in the 80s, I got a computer. And here's a funny story. Back in DOS days, before Windows, it was delivered in its three or four pieces, and the guy just left it on my dining room table. So I plugged the whole thing in, turned it on for the first time, and the first message I got was, fatal disk error. And so I turned it off and thought, I broke the computer. I haven't even used it yet. And I let it sit there for a week until I can track down a friend who knew a lot more than I did. No, but you see, back in those days, it was the programmers who wrote the error messages. So they spoke in their language. Fatal doesn't mean dead. But I didn't know that.
Yes. So, you know, as I was reviewing your blog in preparation for this interview, one of the things I really enjoyed was the photo biography I was talking about before. How'd you create it? How long did it take to create it?
Well, you know, that happened. That was kind of what led me to blogging eventually. There used to be a site called, I think it's still there, called Photolog, which was a precursor to Flickr. Essentially the same thing before Flickr existed. And all the techies and programmers and developers and designers where I worked were posting pictures on that site every day. And they took their digital cameras everywhere and they were always posting pictures. Simultaneously, I had bought my first scanner because I had a lot of old family photos that were moldering in envelopes and boxes. And I wanted to preserve them electronically. And some that were damaged, I took to work with me to get the designers who had more Photoshop experience to help me in fixing the damage. And they looked at the pictures and they said, Ronnie, these are great. What are they? And they wanted the stories behind the pictures. And some go back to 1895, 1905. And they kept saying, you got to put these up on Photolog. I said, no, who cares about family pictures? And the guys kept pushing me and pushing me. I thought, okay, you know, this might be interesting. But they were just posting a picture they took every day. I can't very well put up a picture of my mother when she was an infant and not explain what it is. So I told a little story. And then that developed what, as I was preserving photos for me, I was picking and choosing ones to post on Photolog with the little stories. And, you know, many, many years ago, I knew a guy who was a writer, he'd written many books, but he had started out as a photographer for Rolling Stone. And when I asked him how he made the transition from photography to writing, he said, well, my captions just got longer and longer until I threw away the camera. And that's kind of what happened to me. Stories longer and longer. And pretty soon, pictures caught up to modern day, to the day, and I had no more pictures to keep the timeline going. So that's, and I'd had the blog idea in the back of my head, so that's what got me to blog.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really thinking about doing the same thing. I think it would, I love the, and actually it's a great way to get little short stories as opposed to just writing something so long that people, you know, zone out or whatever.
And your kids and grandchildren are going to love it if you do it.
I think you're right. Do you have any other advice about how to do it or any suggestions?
Well, one of the things, sometimes there was a good photograph just on its own or that filled in a year that I didn't have anything else for. And so I would post the photo and put names up of whoever it was, but I would tell a story then that was contemporaneous with the photograph, historically.
Ah.
For instance, there's a photo of my great-aunt Edith when she was about 65 or 70, somewhere. She didn't retire until she was 70. And so I mentioned that in the lead-in in the story, that long before the mid-century feminist movement, she had been a businesswoman, and I let that lead me into the story about, oh, because it was the year that The Feminine Mystique was published, 1963. Right. So I tied it in with how important the book was.
Right, right.
But that she had had a big, successful business career before the rest of us had the opportunities that or the doors opened that the Feminine Mystique began.
Well, how do you keep up with elder issues and news and technology?
Oh, it's a lot of work. I have about 20 Google alerts that are words or phrases related to aging. I subscribe to a ton of RSS feeds and email newsletters from organizations that relate to aging in a wide variety of ways. Since I started the blog, the number of books about various aspects of aging has just exploded because of the baby boom. And I try to keep track of those. And that's not hard. The book isn't hard. There are very many good books on aging. Most of the rip-off things about how I feel about my gray hair. That's not a book, that's a magazine article.
Right.
So you can get rid of a lot of the books that way, you don't even have to bother. But it's a lot of reading. I know how to read fast, and I know how to skim.
That makes sense. So you're able to pull out stuff, well, it just comes down to all your past experience, too. Well, I have really, really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you so much for doing this. Maybe we can do it again sometime. Thank you.
Thank you. I loved it.
That ends episode 5 of the Marion Vermeersen podcast. I really enjoyed talking with Ronnie. Not only is she a blogging role model for me, but she is also a role model for how I want to live my life. The show notes for this show are at marionvermeersen.blogs.com/mv-podcast. I've put a link there to the Time Goes By website and to Ronnie's Elders for Healthcare post. The music at the beginning and the end of the show is The Latin Project playing Dizzy Gillespie's jazz standard, A Night in Tunisia. The sound quality for this podcast still is not what I would like it to be. As I've said, I'm learning about recording sound and podcasting as I do it. If any of you have experience in this area, I would love to talk with you. I'm eager to hear all your feedback and comments, so please email me at marion.vermeersen@gmail.com or make a comment on my blog. Thanks for listening.